Good morning again. I'm so happy to see you all dialing in for Coffee with Decoder this morning, episode 88. If my speakers will hit star 6, it's almost time to get started. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning. Good morning, Pam.
I've got like 1 minute, and I think you planned something different for us today. So we'll get into that right now because it's 10 o'clock.
Go ahead, Pam, with what you want to say first.
I just wanted to take a second and mention that there's a webinar on Thursday. Please check aq-iq.com if that's a session that's important for you and your work. Be sure and sign up. I do not remember off the top of my head what the price is. This is not a free one, but we will communicate with you about whether you need a bill prior to incurring a charge. So we invite you to participate in that and just watch it. There's some more stuff that got posted this morning. I'm eager to share all of that with you. Now let me give you Paula.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. And, you know, since this time through, dealing with coronavirus has been such a big deal in our world, we did a webinar, and I hope all of you were there. It is posted, I think, on our website, aqiq.com, and it also is posted on Facebook. We did a watch party, and so please share it with everyone that you know of that thinks you think they need to hear it. But it was free, and it was on COVID-19. And with that webinar, we also did one on telehealth, and that one was free as well. And it's out there as well. But we had lots and lots of questions about how to code for COVID-19. And, you know, some of the same questions were asked by multiple people, but we also had a large number of questions and some really good questions. And so I felt like it would be very beneficial today just to try and get through a lot of those questions. Because obviously there's, folks out there who need to know the answers to these questions. And so when we have our normal pre-show and talk about something that's, cool or relevant to healthcare, and then we have our normal show where we're answering questions, and we usually get, maybe 3 to 4 questions. Sometimes the answers are long-winded. Sometimes we might get more, but most of the time it's about 3 to 4. And because we've had so many questions about COVID-19 and how to code it, then I felt like it was important that we discuss it throughout today's session, including in the pre-show. And that said, too, some of the things, and I don't know if you guys are hearing this stuff and all, but from a clinical side and from the research side, there's still a lot of unknown information about COVID-19. And, we're seeing it just when we did the webinar, for instance, I got some comments on the webinar. We got some comments on the webinar that were real out there, I guess I'd say, and the words were some of the words were misspelled, making accusations about it's the ventilators, it's the 5G that are killing people and this and that and the other. And so I'm like, okay, what is this? So I went down the road of researching it, and apparently our government is researching it too, and it's very new. There's actually another person, I went to the person's Facebook page and checked it out, looked at it, and most of the posts on that person's page were very, conspiracy-esque. And then there was even another person, which I don't know if it's a real person or not, but, because sometimes these, they take other people's pictures and they create a website and or a Facebook page and then they start posting. Or, there are folks who are couch surfers who go and post and try to create chaos and things like that. But that said, there was another person, too, who posted, and then this other person is in one of my groups. So because I recognized on both of the site, as a friend to the other person, I kind of did a little investigation and went to that other Facebook page, too, and it was a lady who only had pictures of herself. There was nothing else. So that says to me that both of those Facebooks are likely, like a bot that's going in and You know, it could be coming from someone who is meaning to be more malicious. They might have stolen someone's identity on Facebook, and then they're going and posting all sorts of things. And then so as I went out online, I found out that that is being investigated by the government. And in fact, because there's been so many claims that 5G is spreading the virus, which that, to my knowledge, that is not true based on everything I read, and not even sure that's possible. But what it's causing is a rash and a series of arsons on cell phone towers. So they're doing an investigation. And it was only recently, in the last week, they started doing this investigation, or that we started hearing about it. So that said, it's likely, they think it might be coming from Russia. Not sure. But I just want to mention that to you guys, because there are so much, you know, floating around out there. There's information, there's misinformation, and just know that, you know, as we are answering your questions, we are doing the best we can to research and get the, you know, end-all answer, okay? So now, that said too, things can change. So please be sure to stay involved with us, because as things change, we're going to come back and tell you, hey, this has changed or that's changed. I'm going to ask Pam too. So as part of what we're doing, and because this is so important, you know, not only will she post the recording of today's call, but also we'll create a document so that has all these questions related to COVID-19 as well, and post it too on all the places. You know, so connect with us, Facebook, AQIQ. If you're a revenue warrior, you got that, and we're going to be opening that soon too. Just kind of stalling just a little bit in light of this this whole pandemic, because you know, we just feel like the focus needs to be on treating the patients and taking care of the patients and coding and documenting the patients. So that said, let me get into some of the questions. I know we have just a few minutes left on the insiders, but I felt it was important to tell you what I was telling you. But anyway, so. And I'm going to just start asking the questions. And because we had so many people ask the questions, you know, it's going to be really difficult to draw from these people, because there were several people that asked the same questions. So I think, Pam, what we'll do is just get the folks on the line today and draw from that. So anyway, without further ado, so the first question is, if a patient is recovered and seen for follow-up, is there an ICD-10 related code related to COVID? Wow, I thought that was a good question. I mean, all of them are good questions, but, you know, try not to rate questions, but that is like, wow, did the World Health Organization, did the CDC and all the folks, cooperating parties, did they think about that? Because it seems to me that that would be very useful information to have a history of COVID-19 code, particularly since we're saying that, you know, or since we're hearing that, you know, folks with COVID-19, you know, once they get over it, they're immune to it for a while, you know, and I don't know what that means. I've heard some folks say it's a while, some folks say it's forever. I don't know the answer, and I don't know that anybody else does. So, in that case, I would recommend, or we would recommend actually, reporting Z8619, which is personal history of other infections and parasitic diseases, because there is no code for history of COVID-19, all right? And as they may have thought that as this all transpires, there may not need to be a code for it, but I don't know. I just thought it would have been interesting to have it. Another question, this comes from the IRF setting. It says, on the IRF PI is U07.1 and a manifestation listed, or only U07.1 and the, for instance, pneumonia J1289 listed as a comorbid condition? Okay, so each case, of course, is different, and it's going to be based on the documentation. Of course, that kind of goes without saying, but, you know, I feel like I need to say it. So first of all, you have to consider why you're admitting the patient. Why is, you know, what is going to be the primary focus of care? What is causing that impairment? Is it COVID-related pneumonia? that they got to, and then that's causing the impairment. If so, then yes, you're going to report the UO7.1 and the pneumonia as your EDO, okay? Also, if there's other respiratory conditions that that have been caused because of it, those could also be listed as your EDO. However, you know, if the condition, you know, is, well, let me just say this. If the COVID with pneumonia is still the primary focus of care, then yes. However, report it also as the EDO secondary to the COVID. Now, I'm going to expect this will happen a lot because the primary manifestation will likely drive the IGC selection, and that's what your EDO is. It's supporting your IGC selection. So, for example, a patient has acute respiratory failure due to COVID, and the pulmonary debility is causing the need for rehab. The acute respiratory failure is resolved. Both codes would be EDO, and the COVID is resolved. Both codes would be EDO. But if the manifestation is secondary and not the driver, but still a focus, just not the primary focus, it's not the underlying cause or of the impairment, you know, you'd list it as a comorbidity. So remember, the etiologic diagnosis, know that you're not going to see the diagnosis on the UBO4 if it is, or your coder may not give it to you if they're coding for the acute care side as well. They're not just a rehab coder. The etiologic diagnosis can be resolved. So if the COVID and the pneumonia are resolved and you're bringing the patient into rehab, the coder is not going to give you those codes if they're not coding for just rehab. If they're coding for the acute hospital, they're not going to give it to you all if it's resolved because, if they are coding, I'm rethinking my answer. If they're coding for an IRF only, they realize that the etiologic needs to be a condition that's causing the underlying impairment. So that said, they will give it to you, or they may be entering it themselves. A lot of times the coders are entering in the software. Now, in the case of an acute respiratory condition without a chronic component, I wanted to go ahead and speak to this. Your IGC is going to be 16, and if there is an acute on chronic condition that was caused by COVID that is causing the impairment, then, an acute on chronic pulmonary condition, you're going to go to IGC 10.1 or 10.9 because they're chronic feature that, you know, was exacerbated into acute. So that said, I just felt like it was important to speak to that. Yeah.
Before you go to the next question, I want to go ahead and start the 10.10. Sorry, I missed it in the middle of your conversation, so let me just get that started. Thank you for being here for episode 88, and you came in right at the end of Paula's question that she was addressing in the insider's portion, and we're going to share it with you today, even if you didn't come at 10 o'clock. So let me give you back, Paula. Let's go back to these COVID questions.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, well, guys, we just decided to do something different on the insider portion. Hope you can join us if you weren't there on future episodes, but we just, instead of doing a teaching or talking about something relevant, in what our healthcare world, we decided, because we had so many questions related to COVID, to try to get through as many as possible today. So the next question is, can you use Z20818 on negative results for COVID tests? So basically, the guidelines direct us to report Z03818. That's for an encounter for observation for suspected exposure or to other biologic agents ruled out. Okay, thanks for that question. Another question that was asked was, what is the principal diagnosis when COVID-19 and sepsis are present on admission? We did cover this in the webinar we did on COVID, and it is a free webinar. It's out on Facebook page, and it's also on our website. So the rules for coding COVID-19 that progress to sepsis, severe sepsis, or septic shock are the same as reporting other infections that progress to sepsis. That rule did not change. So I'm going to tell you what the guidelines say. It says the circumstances of admission determine the principal diagnosis. The AHA gives the following example. If a patient is admitted with pneumonia due to COVID-19, which then progresses to viral sepsis, not present on admission, the principal diagnosis U07.1 COVID-19 followed by codes for viral sepsis and viral pneumonia would be reported. On the other hand, if a patient is admitted with sepsis due to COVID-19 pneumonia and the sepsis meets the definition of principal diagnosis, then the code for viral sepsis, A4189, should be assigned as principal diagnosis followed by U07.1 and J1289 as secondary diagnoses. And then when there's severe sepsis with acute organ dysfunction or septic shock, you're going to add R6520 or 21 as appropriate, whether or not there was organ dysfunction. So for sepsis, you're going to follow the sepsis guidelines. And if you need a refresher on coding for sepsis, we have a really great presentation in the AQIQ library. It really talks through the clinical picture of sepsis as well as the coding picture. Now, we'll probably need to update that. And if any of you guys are interested in us doing it live, please let me know, because then we can include COVID in it, because this was created before the COVID pandemic. All right, the next question. When the provider indicates the patient has COVID, when the test returns negative and the provider claims it is a false negative, what is the correct way to code it? Wow, okay. So my first statement is, you're going to query the provider, or you might need to query the provider. You need to really check all the documentation and see if anything is has changed related to that, because, was the patient inpatient, were they outpatient, and we're only coding confirmed cases, right? So I would say we're going to educate our providers and talk within our organization regarding how to document this. Since we can only code those confirmed cases, educating the physicians and the other providers to, document it as existing when their clinical expertise coupled with the test result reflects the diagnosis of COVID-19. I have listened to several webinars and trainings on the clinical aspects of COVID-19, and, they're recommending that physicians not simply use the test to determine if the patient is COVID-19 positive, because there are, I think one of the numbers I heard thrown out was like 30% error rate in the test findings, test results. And because we're hearing so many things, we don't know what is accurate. And then, you read other things saying, oh, there was problems with the test. And we know there were problems with the test on the front end, but they didn't release the test because there's a problem with it. And then they came back and released it later. So that said, because COVID-19, we cannot report unconfirmed cases, we need to really get with our provider staff, our physician staff, our mid-level staff, whoever is doing the documenting and the chart, and educate them. If you believe, and if all these clinical parameters stack up to say this is COVID-19 and their test is negative, then, really it needs to be documented as a positive case, because we can't report it if it's not. If you're treating it like COVID, we need to report it as COVID, okay? Other than, I know that, I guess I should clarify that, because there's a lot of hospitals who, and physicians, I'm sure, that if the patient has any symptomatology, if there's fever, if there's cough, they're really starting to, they're treating the patient as COVID-19, but in this case, the physician obviously felt like there was more information that was not given to him on the test, that the patient was truly COVID-19 positive. There's other things I've read where the patients, have tested negative for COVID-19 like 2, 3, 4 times, and then they go in and get the biopsy, or not biopsy, or the sampling directly from the lungs. And when they do that, they then find that the patient is COVID-19 positive. But they may not have the option to do that with all patients. So it depends on the patient, what they can do, what they can't do, and, that patient's status of, how sick they are or not. So, all right, so next question. is what is the correct code assignment for a negative COVID test? That is, we talked about that earlier, Z03818. This is an encounter for observation for suspected exposure to other biologic agents ruled out. This is for cases where there is a concern about possible exposure to COVID-19, but it's ruled out after evaluation. Then we had another question that says, can you please clarify the use of Z03818, principal only, Z20828, or Z1159? And so since the question said principal only, then that means it's an inpatient. So I wanted to find those codes and the ramification on the DRGs because it's very beneficial to know this information. So Z03818 is for encounter for observation for suspected exposure to other biologic agents ruled out, which we just talked about. And we talked about why that is used, really. So let me just repeat it. It's used when there's a thought about a possible exposure to COVID, but it's ruled out. So Z03818, they thought there was exposure, but they ruled it out. When it's used as a principal, it drives the DRG 951, which is other factors influencing health status, which is reimbursed around $4,273. Okay, so that's just the national average rate. And then Z20828 is for contact with and suspected exposure to other viral communicable diseases. That also goes to DRG 951, and that we were going to report that for patients who had an exposure or were suspected to have an exposure, okay? And then Z11.59, that is an encounter for screening for other viral diseases. The guidelines state for asymptomatic individuals who are being screened for COVID-19 and have no known exposure to the virus, and the test results are either unknown or negative, you're going to assign Z1159, encounter for screening for other viral diseases. This is an unacceptable code to be used for a principal diagnosis. And then if the, I'm not sure why I did that. I put a little note in here about another DRG. So I think I had said that's unacceptable. So the other thing I need to tell you, though, is just remember that anytime there is a positive test, U07 is used with the manifestations, not one of the Z codes that we talked about. And the when the principal diagnosis is U07.1, the DRG is going to be 177 to 179, depending on whether or not an MCC or a CC is also reported. And that payment is going to range anywhere from, you know, $5,700 about to about, you know, $11,000, almost $300. So I expect many of these cases may be outlier cases because if they end up being long-term, you know, staying in the hospital longer than anticipated for 177 to 179 and, you know, the resources are more intensive, you know, I expect there might be some outliers. So we have a few more questions. I know we're bumped over. I want to answer a few more, and then whatever we don't get to, I'm going to ask Pam to put it on a document, and we're going to float it out there to everybody, and you know, send it to all your friends, have them, you know, sign up so they can be a part of this conversation moving forward on Coffee with a Coder. So the next question is there a Z code to account for extra care a patient received due to precautions such as isolation, pending test results, So if a patient's test results have not been returned, the symptoms along with Z20828 for suspected exposure can be used. If the test returns negative, like we talked about earlier, you're going to report Z03818. And if the test returns positive, you're going to report the actual condition itself with any manifestations, the U07.1. You would not report Z03.89 because for the for a suspected condition not elsewhere classified. You're not going to report that code. And that said, the CDC strongly recommends, because the importance of gathering this data is so important, that cases are not coded until the patient is discharged and tests are completed, so that, you know, positive cases are reported as positive. So that's one of the pieces of information that I read from the CDC. Another question is, are commercial payers paying for G2023 specimen collection for COVID-19? We know that commercial payers have changed their rules about what they're paying. Okay, they've increased what they're paying related to the COVID-19. However, you know, that said, typically HCPCS G codes are paid for by for Medicare claims, and other payers, you know, might want to see a CPT or other HCPCS codes. However, this too is payer specific, so you're going to have to reach out to the individual payers to see, you know, if they're covering that diagnosis. Okay, I think I'm going to answer one more question, and then we'll post the questions on Facebook, on our pages, on our on AQIQ.com, and then tell Pam to do the drawing. So the last question, and this one says, do you agree with guidance below for symptomatic patients with a negative COVID result? And the question was, inpatient is tested for COVID with the test comes back negative but positive for pneumonia and the flu. Should we be using the Z-code in addition to the diagnosis for flu and pneumonia? So the answer was, assign the codes for flu and pneumonia, and then also assign a code for Z2828, contact with and suspected exposure with viral and communicable diseases. So, yes, we do agree. Although the case does not mention if the patient had symptoms and did not mention if the patient had actual exposure, the code Z2828 is not only used for contact with, but also for suspected exposure to other viral communicable diseases. The case mentions the patient is tested, identifying the fact that it was suspected, and the other code in the category Z20.89 does not specify viral communicable diseases, so you wouldn't report it. It looks like because, you know, they tested the patient and they came back positive for pneumonia, and the patient was symptomatic, then, yeah, I would do the Z20.828, or we would. So thank you so much for your time today. And, Pam, I'll send it back to you to do the mugging. And I think we got most of the questions answered. We'll post them, you know, like I said, everywhere. And send in your questions, guys. We love these questions. We love researching them for you. You know, we got some telehealth questions, too, so we'll try to include those next time and, you know, maybe get a paper out about those as well. So, Pam?
Thank you, thank you. I just want to mention on that last one, because sometimes you talk a little bit fast, and if they're not looking at the piece of paper like I am, they might miss the code that you said, Z20.828.
Okay.
So when you speak fast,
you.
It sounds like Z2828. So it's Z20.828, which I'm sure those of you who are who've been in this a while, you might recognize that, but I just wanted to be clear for those that might not. Okay, so I have been furiously writing down names or phone numbers of everyone who has dialed in today, and I'm about to pick one out of my hat, so to speak. So let's see who is going to win today. Okay, so I don't know your name. You're calling in on a cell phone, and the last part of your phone number is 75. So I will call you from Tampa in a few minutes to find out who you are and where I can send your mug. Thank you for joining us. And we're looking forward to seeing you again. I love the date of our next session. 2 weeks from today is May the 4th, and that's one of my favorite dates. So I invite you to join episode 89 on May the 4th. And we just look forward to interacting with you on social media and on our website and any other way we can. Have a wonderful day.